Canto 9. In Italy the dawn, once mistress of worn-out Tithonus, whitened with its light the window of the east, and from her love drew free. The gems on her sweet brow were bright, set in the form of that cold little beast, the scorpion that stings men with its tail. And here the night, in step with that increased illumination, set out on its trail into the dark. Two climbing steps it made, and almost on the third had closed its wings, so it was nine at night. In me had stayed something of Adam's human weight that brings the need for sleep. Exhausted, I stretched out where five of us were seated on the grass, and there I dreamed. And that dream was about the hour near morning when the swallows passed their time in plaintive song, the memory, perhaps, of Philomela's ancient woe. And when our minds, from mortal weight set free, and mortal thought in that state seem to know the future like the past, so what we see looks like a vision of the not yet so. I seemed to see an eagle gliding high and poised, with feathers gold and open wings, to plummet in a moment from the sky. And I was at the place that Ovid sings, my Virgil sang it too, where Ganymede, lost to his hunting friends, was taken up by Jove, who took an eagle's shape and speed, and rode the clouds with all the gods to sup and sit in council. For myself, I thought, perhaps it strikes here only, and disdains to use its mighty claws for the transport of anyone from elsewhere. For my pains I was rewarded when I saw the bird first wheel a while before it fell my way, as frightful as the lightning. In a word, upon the instant I became its prey. And up I went, to meet the fire between earth and the moon, and there, it seemed, we burned together. And the flames that I had seen only in sleep so scorched me that they turned me out of bed, awake as I had been before I slept. Just as Achilles sprang awake after his mother, as he slept, transferred him, and all of this Statius sang, from Chiron's care to Scyros while she kept him in her arms, until from there the Greeks won him away, so I was startled too. Sleep fled, and I felt in my ice-cold cheeks the color fade, which it is bound to do in any face that feels fear. There alone beside me was my comfort, and the sun, already 2 hours high, was on its own beyond its star companions. Night was done. My gaze turned to the sea. "Now have no fear," my leader said. "Take heart, for it bodes well for us. Renew your strength, for you are near to purgatory, and there is how you tell. That rampart rings it in. So now we're here. And there's the entrance, where the mound looks split. Not long ago, at dawn before the day, when your soul, on the flowers by which is lit the place below, still slept, there came your way a lady who said, 'I am Lucy. Let me take this man that sleeps, so I can speed him on his road.' Sordello lingered yet, with all the noble souls, and her first deed was taking you, and when the daylight shone, she took you up. I followed, till she put you down here, but her eyes first fixed upon this opened entrance. Then she turned her foot, and she and sleep together were soon gone. As those in doubt, when reassured, may find, through truth, that fear is turned to confidence, so I was changed. My guide saw how my mind was free from care, my face no longer tense. He climbed the mound. I tagged along behind, towards the summit. Reader, you see how I rise to a high theme. Don't wonder, then, if I should elevate my manner now with stronger rhymes and figures from my pen as intricate as fancy may allow. We drew near, and came to a point from which, where first I thought I saw only a gap as if a dam were broken by a ditch, I saw a gate, and that gate was the cap for three steps leading up to it, each rich with color, and a porter who said naught as yet, and as I stared at him intent, where he sat on the topmost step, I caught the full force of his face, the way it sent more light to me than I could bear the thought of feeling further on my eyes. A sword was naked in his hand, fit to reflect the rays on us, so I could not afford one long look, but was driven to collect the merest glimpses of its untoward brilliance. From where you are, say what you seek, and on whose warrant. See that your long climb be not to your harm. Name your sponsor, speak, or do I look as if I'm made of time? A woman from the sky who is astute in all these things, my master answered, said to us just now, you must be resolute. Go that way, it's the gate, just go ahead. And may she guide your footsteps on the route to good, the courteous warder added. So come forward to our stairs. And we approached. The first step was white marble, with the glow of clarity, and smooth, no blur encroached. I saw it in the face that best I know. The second, darkest purple, burnt and rough. A stone split lengthways and across. The third, that weighed down from the top, looked near enough to porphyry, yet flamed and swam and stirred like red blood spurting from a vein. On this God's angel rested both his feet, then sat upon the threshold, which analysis by eye alone said must have been a flat, wide slice of adamant without a flaw. Up these three steps. Step one meant the first stage of penitence, contrition. By that law, step two betokened the next shining page, confession. And step three, a true remorse, the end point of regret's hard pilgrimage. My leader drew me with the holy force of his goodwill. Now bid him that the bolt should be withdrawn, which is his given task, but do it humbly. Those feet without fault I threw myself in front of, there to ask devoutly that he open up, but first I smote my breast three times. Then seven P's he traced across my brow with that sunburst he called a sword while I was on my knees. You're in, he said. Try not to think the worst. These wounds wash off. Cold ash, or earth dug dry, would match his raiment, out of which he drew two keys, one gold, one silver, to apply, first one the white and then the yellow, to the door so I could be content. When one of these keys fails to open up the lock, he told us both, the vital thing's not done. The passage stays shut solid as a rock. One cost more, but the other one demands more skill and wisdom if it is to move the lock's wards, for it's he who understands who solves the knot. Mere doctrine may not prove sufficient. They were Peter's, and he bade me err through opening, not keeping closed, so long as longing souls continue glad to throw themselves the way that they're supposed to do at my feet. Then he pushed the door of the hallowed gateway open. Enter! But you have to look, he said, always before. Look back, and you will find the door swung shut with you outside again. Each single hinge belonging to that heaving, booming mass of metal door creaked fit to bring a cringe of shame to Rome's great rock that cried, Alas, the Tarpeian, that treasure house roared less, nor showed itself more stubborn when the good Metellus lost it by the ruthlessness of Caesar. And its groaning gate withstood a legion, then gave way to the excess of force, and then that strong box was laid bare. But this held treasure of a different kind. Te Deum, the sweet notes hung in the air. Te Deum laudamus, they touched my mind. Those voices, and perhaps they started there. I heard the same thing that we sometimes find when human song and organ sound are joined, and now the words are blurred, and now new coined.